Chapter 20. A Man Called Uwe and an Intruder. For almost 20 minutes, Uwe sits in the driver's seat of the Saab with the garage door open. For the first 5 minutes, the cat stares at him impatiently from the passenger seat. During the next 5, it begins to look properly worried. In the end, it tries to open the door itself. When this fails, it promptly lies down on the seat and goes to sleep. Uwe glances at it as it rolls onto its side and starts snoring. He has to concede that the cat annoyance has a very direct approach to problem solving. He looks out over the parking area, again, at the garage opposite. He must have stood out there with Rune 100 times. They were friends once. Uwe can't think of very many people in his life he could describe as such. Uwe and Uwe's wife were the first people to move into the street of row houses all those years ago, when it had only recently been built and was still surrounded by trees. That same day, Rune and Rune's wife moved in. Anita was also pregnant and, of course, immediately became best friends with Uwe's wife. In that way, only women knew how. And just like all women who become best friends, they both had the idea that Rune and Uwe had to become best friends because they had so many interests in common. Uwe couldn't really understand what they meant by that. After all, Rune drove a Volvo. Not that Uwe exactly had anything against Rune apart from that. He had a proper job and didn't talk more than he had to. Admittedly, he did drive that Volvo, but as Uwe's wife kept insisting, this did not necessarily make a person immoral. So Uwe put up with him. After a period, he even lent him tools. And one afternoon, standing in the parking area, thumbs tucked into their belts, they got caught up in a conversation about lawnmower prices. When they parted, they shook hands, as if the mutual decision to become friends was a business agreement. When the two men later found out that all sorts of people were moving into the area, they sat down in Uwe and Sonia's kitchen for consultations. By the time they emerged from these, they had established a shared framework of rules, signs, clarifying what was permitted or not, and a newly set up steering group for the residents' association. Uwe was the chairman, Rune the vice chairman. In the months that followed, they went to the dump together, grumbled at people who had parked their cars incorrectly, bargained for better deals on paint and drain pipes at the hardware store, stood on either side of the man from the telephone company when he came to install telephones and jacks, brusquely pointing out where and how he should best go about it. Not that either of them knew exactly how telephone cables should be installed, but they were both well-versed in keeping an eye on whippersnappers like this one, to stop them pulling a fast one. That was all there was to it. Sometimes the two couples had dinner together. Insofar as one could have dinner when Uwe and Rune mostly just stood about in the parking area the whole evening, kicking the tires of their cars and comparing their load capacity, turning radius, and other significant matters. And that was all there was to it. Sonia's and Anita's bellies kept growing steadily, which, according to Rune, made Anita doolally in the brain. Apparently, he had to look for the coffee pot in the fridge more or less daily once she was in her third month. Sonia, not to be outdone, developed a temper that could flare up quicker than a pair of saloon doors in a John Wayne film, which made Uwe reluctant to open his mouth at all. This, of course, gave further cause for irritation. When she wasn't breaking out in a sweat, she was freezing. And as soon as Uwe tired of arguing with her and agreed to turn up the radiators by a half step, she started sweating again, and he had to run around and turn them back down again. She also ate bananas in such quantities that the people at the supermarket must have thought Uwe had started a zoo. "The hormones are on the warpath," Rune said with an insightful nod during one of the nights when he and Uwe sat in the outside space behind his house, while the women kept to Sonia and Uwe's kitchen, talking about whatever it is women talk about. Rune told him that he had found Anita crying her eyes out by the radio the day before, for no other reason than that it was a nice song.
"A nice song?" said Uwe, perplexed.
"A nice song," Rune answered. The two men shook their heads in mutual disbelief and stared out into the darkness, sat in silence.
"The grass needs cutting," said Rune at last.
"I bought new blades for the mower," Uwe nodded. "How much did you pay for them?" And so their friendship went on. In the evenings, Sonia played music for her belly because she said it made the child move. Uwe mostly just sat in his armchair on the other side of the room and pretended to be watching television while she was doing it. In his innermost thoughts, he was worried about what it would be like once the child finally decided to come out. What if, for example, the kid disliked Uwe because Uwe wasn't so fond of music? It wasn't that Uwe was afraid. He just didn't know how to prepare himself for fatherhood. He had asked for some sort of manual, but Sonia had just laughed at him. Uwe didn't understand why. There were manuals for everything else. He was doubtful about whether he'd be any good at being someone's dad. He didn't like children an awful lot. He hadn't even been very good at being a child. Sonia thought he should talk to Rune about it because they were in the same situation. Uwe couldn't quite understand what she meant by that. Rune was not, in fact, going to be the father of Uwe's child, but of an altogether different one. At least Rune agreed with Uwe about the point of not having much to discuss, and that was something. So when Anita came over in the evenings and sat in the kitchen with Sonia, talking about the aches and pains and all those things, Uwe and Rune made the excuse of having things to talk about and went out to Uwe's shed and just stood there in silence, picking at various bits on Uwe's workbench. Standing there next to each other behind a closed door for the third night, running without knowing what they were supposed to do with themselves, they agreed that they needed to get busy with something before, as Rune put it, the new neighbors start thinking there's some sort of monkey business going on in here. Uwe agreed that it might be best to do as he said, and so it was. They didn't talk much while they were doing it, but they helped each other with the drawings and measuring the angles and ensuring that the corners were straight and properly done. And late one evening, when Anita and Sonia were in the fourth month, two light blue cribs were installed in the prepared nurseries of their row houses. "We can sand it down and repaint it pink if we got a girl," mumbled Uwe when he showed it to Sonia. Sonia put her arms around him and he felt his neck getting all wet with her tears, completely irrational hormones. "I want you to ask me to be your wife," she whispered. And so it was. They married in the town hall, very simply. Neither of them had any family, so only Rune and Anita came. Sonia and Uwe put on their rings, and then all four of them went to a restaurant. Uwe paid, but Rune helped check the bill to make sure it had been done properly. Of course it hadn't. So after conferring with the waiter for about an hour, the two men managed to convince him it would be easier for him if he have the bill or they'd report him. Obviously, it was a bit hazy exactly who would report whom for what, but eventually, with a certain amount of swearing and arm-waving, the waiter gave up and went into the kitchen and wrote them a new bill. In the meantime, Rune and Uwe nodded grimly at one another without noticing that their wives, as usual, had taken a taxi home 20 minutes earlier. Uwe nods to himself as he sits there in the sob looking at Rune's garage door. He can't remember when he last saw it open. He turns off the headlights of the Saab, gives the cat a poke to wake it up, and gets out. "Uwe," says a curious, unfamiliar voice. Suddenly, an unknown woman, clearly the owner of the unfamiliar voice, has stuck her head into the garage. She's about 45, wearing tatty jeans and a green windbreaker that looks too large for her. She doesn't have any makeup on, and her hair is in a ponytail. The woman blunders into his garage and looks around with interest. The cat steps forward and gives her a threatening hiss. She stops. Uwe puts his hands in his pockets. "Uwe," she bursts out again, in that exaggerated, chummy way of people who want to sell you something while pretending it's the very last thing on their mind.
"I don't want anything," says Uwe, nodding at the garage door,
a clear gesture that she needn't bother about finding another door. It'll be just fine if she walks out the same way that she came. She looks utterly unchastened by that. "My name is Lena. I'm a journalist at the local newspaper, and, well," she begins and then offers her hand. Uwe looks at her hand and looks at her.
"I don't want anything," he says again.
"What?"
"I suppose you're selling subscriptions, but I don't want one."
She looks puzzled. "Right. Well, actually, I'm not selling the paper. I write for it. I'm a journalist," she repeats slowly, as if there were something wrong with him.
"Still don't want anything,"
Uwe reiterates as he starts shooing her out the garage door. "But I want to talk to you, Uwe," she protests, and starts trying to force herself back inside. Uwe waves his hands at her as if trying to scare her away by shaking an invisible rug in front of her. "You saved a man's life at the train station yesterday. I want to interview you about it," she calls out excitedly. Clearly, she's about to say something else when she notices that she's lost Uwe's attention. His gaze falls on something behind her. His eyes turn to slits.
"I'll be damned," he mumbles.
"Yes, I'd like to ask you," she begins sincerely, but Uwe has already squeezed past her and started running towards the white Skoda that's turned in by the parking area and started driving down towards the houses. The bespectacled woman is caught off guard when Uwe charges forward and bangs on the window, and she throws the file of documents into her own face. The man in the white shirt, on the other hand, is quite unmoved. He rolls down the window.
"Yes," he asks. "Vehicle traffic is prohibited in the residential area," Uwe hisses and points at each of the houses, at the Skoda, at the man in the white shirt, and at the parking area. "In this residence association, we park in the parking area."
The man in the white shirt looks at the houses, then at the parking area, then at Uwe.
"I have permission from the council to drive up to the houses, so I have to ask you to get out of the way."
Uwe is so agitated by his answer that it takes him many seconds just to formulate some swear words by way of an answer. Meanwhile, the man in the white shirt has picked up a pack of cigarettes from the dashboard, which he taps against his trouser leg.
"Would you be kind enough to get out of the way?" he asks Uwe.
"What are you doing here?" Uwe blurts out.
"That's nothing for you to worry yourself about," says the man in the white shirt in a monotone voice, as if he's a computer-generated voicemail message, letting Uwe know that he's been placed in a telephone line.
He puts the cigarette he's shaken out in his mouth and lights it. Uwe breathes so heavily that his chest is pumping up and down under his jacket. The woman gathers up her papers and files and adjusts her glasses. The man just sighs, as if Uwe is a cheeky child refusing to stop riding his skateboard on the sidewalk.
"You know what I'm doing here. We're taking Rune in the house at the end of the road into care."
He hangs his arm out the window and flicks the ash against the wing mirror of the Skoda.
"Taking him into care?"
"Yes," says the man, nodding indifferently.
"And if Anita doesn't want that?"
Uwe hisses, tapping his index finger against the roof of the car. The man in the white shirt looks at the woman in the passenger seat and smiles resignedly. Then he turns to Uwe again and speaks very slowly. As if otherwise, Uwe might not understand his words.
"It's not up to Anita to make that decision. It's up to the investigation team."
Uwe's breathing becomes even more strained. He can feel his pulse in his throat.
"You're not bringing this car into this area," he says through gritted teeth.
His fists are clenched. His tone is pointed and threatening. But his opponent looks quite calm. He puts out the cigarette against the paintwork of the door and drops it on the ground. As if everything Uwe had said was nothing more than the inarticulate raving of a senile old man.
"And what exactly are you going to do to stop me, Uwe?" says the man at long last.
The way he flings out his name makes Uwe look as if someone just shoved a mallet in his gut. He stares at the man in the white shirt, his mouth slightly agape, and his eyes scanning to and fro over the car.
"How do you know my name?"
"I know a lot about you." Uwe only manages by a whisker to pull his foot out of the way of the wheel as the Skoda moves off again and drives down towards the houses. Uwe stands there, in shock, staring after them.
"Who was that?"
says the woman in the windbreaker behind him. Uwe spins around.
"How do you know my name?" he demands.
She takes a step back, pushes a few evasive wisps of hair out of her face without taking her eyes off Uwe's clenched fists.
"I work for the local newspaper. We interviewed people on the platform about how you saved that man."
"How do you know my name?" says Uwe again, his voice shaking with anger.
"You swiped your card when you paid for your train ticket. I went through the receipts in the register," she says, and takes a few more steps back.
"And him? How does he know my name?"
Uwe roars and waves in the direction in which the Skoda went, the veins on his forehead bulging.
"I don't know," she says. Uwe breathes violently through his nose and nails her with his eyes, as if trying to see whether she's lying. "I have no idea. I've never seen that man before," she promises. Uwe rivets his eyes into her even harder. Finally, he nods, grimly to himself. Then he turns around and walks towards his house. She calls out to him, but he doesn't react. The cat follows him into the hall. Uwe closes the door. Farther down the road, the man in the white shirt and the woman with glasses ring the doorbell of Anita and Rune's house. Uwe sinks onto the stool in his hall, shaking with humiliation. He had almost forgotten that feeling, the humiliation of it, the powerlessness, the realization that one cannot fight men in white shirts. And now they're back. They haven't been here since he and Sonia came home from Spain after the accident.